Really, it is great to be here today. And if you're watching online, it's great for you to be with us as well. I always enjoy hearing from people who I didn't actually see, but they communicate with me because they heard and participated online. So for all you online folks, we're glad you're here, but I want to tell you, we have a pretty full house. It's great. I always think the best seat in the house in a situation like this right here is where Steve Barnett is sitting. See, because Steve can see everybody. And, you know, I always used to think, too, that that person who's back there is probably the assistant principal looking for people who are acting up. And so, Steve, if you need to take anybody out, go right ahead, you know. Do what you do. But really, it's great to be here. Today, man, appreciate everybody who's participated so far. Just have led us to a great place in worshiping God. And today, this probably happens to all of us at one time or another, but the unity prayer became really personal because my best friend lives in Ukraine, and he has been there for 5 years working with folks, kids who age out of orphanages, and then what do? And so he has a place where they come and prepare for whatever the next step is, hopefully not, you know, gang life or prostitution, because that's where a lot of them head. And so it's just, but when I saw the name Ukraine, I knew immediately. As a matter of fact, though, I will say that friend, his name is Tony Marl. I've spoken about him before here, but he called me today from Ukraine as I was driving over. I was right in the middle of Fort Worth, and he called me, and you know what he wanted to know? If I'd watched the basketball game, baby, because, you know, ACU, his alma mater and mine, beat the Longhorns last night. What? And anyway, Tony's in Ukraine, and so the prayer was personal to me. It's great just to participate with everything we've done so far. Today, we're continuing our series in Genesis, In the Beginning. And if you're at home, you don't know this, but our big screen is missing. And we have what's this called?
TV.
Yeah. The monitor, that's what it's really called, that usually sits in front of me is sitting to my right so everybody here can see it. But, you know, I look at that a lot during the sermon. So I'm going to be doing this. Wondering what I'm supposed to say, because if I don't see it, I might just wander off into stories, and we'll be here till about 3 o'clock. So here we're talking about Genesis and in the beginning, what's going on, and Genesis, as we're going to get to it today, sets the foundation for a lot of things that happen next, like for instance Exodus, which is the very next book. But a lot of the principles that Exodus goes deeper into and more detail into, they're planted, those seeds are planted in Genesis. And then not only in Exodus, but then all the way into Matthew, and then into Philippians. And so we sang a song today that's part of the lyrics are straight from Philippians 3. It was the lead us to the cross, and this idea of everything I once held dear, I count it all as lost. And you can just hear Paul in Philippians 3 saying, all these great things I used to be, I don't care about them. All I care about now is the cross of Christ. Okay? Well, that idea is going to be a seed that was planted way back in Genesis, and we're going to talk about that today. And we're going to do it in this way as we talk about big stories, little stories, and theological threads. And in Genesis, there's all of these things. There's some big stories. So help me out with the big stories. Tell me just if you can name a person or a thing or an event that's a big story in Genesis. It was what?
Creation.
Creation was a big story. Yeah, it's a big story in Genesis. What's another one?
Abraham,
the man and his whole life. It's a big story. What else? Noah and the flood, great, big stories. there's some little stories. And I'm going to pick out the little stories because you might say a little story that you think's little, but I think's big. Well, anyway, I'm the preacher today. And so a little story, yeah. Well, I wrote it on a note I had to myself. There it is. One is about Dinah. And some of you know the story of Dinah. It's a little story. It's the story of Dinah, and she's the daughter of Jacob and Leah, and some bad things happened to her. And we're not going to talk about it, but it's a little story. And another one would be Judah and Tamar. It's a little story, but it's an important story. We can learn a lot from that story. Another one would be Abraham and Melchizedek. I mean, it's in the story of Abraham, but it's a little bitty part of the story of Abraham. Just talks a few verses, and then it becomes a big thing later on. And so then there's the what we talked about this earlier, the story of Lamech and his two wives in Genesis 4. And like it's like three verses, but it has an impact on what happens next, which is the flood. So there's little stories. And then what I'm calling today is there's theological threads. And you know, I send some of these ideas that I'm having over to Jeanette, and she picks the songs, and they're great almost every time, just perfect match for what I'm going to say. And but she's also kind of sassy. And so sometimes I'll send her some stuff, and she'll send back a thing like this. She says, what happens when you pull on a theological thread? Does something unravel? I'm like, what? What? Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Thanks, Jeanette. It took me an hour to get over thinking about that thought, you know. No, nothing unravels. What are you even talking about? But today we're going to talk about what I'm calling a theological thread. It's something that's begun in Genesis, talking about it, and then it grows into something really big and really, you know, in Exodus and even bigger in Leviticus and all through the Old Testament, and then it grows into something else in the New Testament and in our lives. And what I'm calling that theological thread is about altars. And so the title of this sermon back is Altars and Crosses. Altars and Crosses. So there'll be something about crosses too today. But we're talking about altars, and we're going to talk about the altars that are in the book of Genesis. And now altars become a really bigger deal in Exodus and Leviticus. And then even bigger when they build a tabernacle, and there's a special, lots of instructions about how to do the sacrifices. In Genesis, there's no instructions. I mean, all of a sudden they're having a sacrifice, and you don't even know if there's an altar there. That's Cain and Abel. They sacrificed some stuff. We don't know if there's an altar or not. They just sacrificed. And who told them to do that? There's no instructions about why to do it or when to do it. They did it. Turned out good for one of them. Well, it turned out bad for both of them, actually. It turned out bad for both of them. Because even Abel, who had the good sacrifice, got murdered for it. So, you know, it was a rough situation there in Genesis chapter 4. But later, there's altars. And there's altars in Genesis. And I'm going to talk about the altars of Genesis. And there's eight of them. There was eight altars in Genesis. I'm going to talk about all eight of them just real quickly. And the first one was Noah. Noah had one altar, and he had it. It was in chapter 8 of Genesis. And he got out of the ark, and he built an altar, it says. And he's on the mountain, Ararat. He's on the mountain of Ararat, and he built an altar, and he sacrifices some clean animals. And then God says, man, that smells good. I don't know. Barbecue, probably. So that smells good, and I'm going to make a covenant with you, and you know we're going to have this relationship, me and human beings. God says, I'm going to have this relationship with human beings, and it was a covenant. It celebrated the new covenant. It wasn't repenting of any sins. It wasn't substitutionary like we'll get to in a minute. It wasn't for guilt. It wasn't about that. It was just worship. And in Genesis, the altars of Genesis have lots more to do with worship than they do any forgiveness. Now, in Exodus, as we get further, it's all about, a lot of it's about forgiveness. I've sinned, and I'm going to offer something instead of myself. I deserve to be punished, but I'm going to offer a sheep, a goat, something else, a pigeon, later in the New Testament. But that's not what these altars are about. They're about worship, and we'll get to that in a second. The second altar is Abraham's, and it's in chapter 12, and he is in a place. Now, Abraham, remember, what he's doing is following God wherever God tells him to go, right? Like some of you knew where you're going this morning. Abraham didn't know where he was going. He said, I'm going to just start walking and God will tell me where to go. So glad y'all knew where to come, right here. And but Abraham didn't know. So as he's going from place to place, one of the things he does when he settles down in a place, he builds an altar. So the first one is in chapter 12. Verse 7, and he's in a place called Shechem. And that's quite a ways from where he started, like several hundred miles. It's just a few miles from where Jerusalem's going to be. So all of his altars are in this little area. But it'd be like, you know, you're building an altar, you know, just down the street on Cooper. And now then we're going to come down. And in the very next verse, he moves to a different town, Bethel. And that's like now he's moved all the way down to Green Oaks. Okay, so he's moved a little bit, not very far. But he builds a new altar because, you know what? One of the reasons these guys are building altars is because it's an identity thing. They're saying, this is who I am. I'm a person who worships God, and I do it at this altar. Does that make sense? We are a people who sometimes will build a building, and that's where we worship. But you know what? We worship in a lot of places besides a building. Like, for instance, work, you know, or play. We worship. Okay, we'll come to that in a minute, too. So the next altar, he built one in Shechem. He moved down a little further, built one in Bethel. And then the next one he builds, still a little farther south, if I had my map here like Dr. Vanderlyn, I'd show you, is in Hebron. And so he's got three different places. Abraham moves. But see, Abraham is in the business of following God. He says, go to a place I'm going to show you. Well, he actually shows him several different places. And so he goes to Shechem, and then he goes to Bethel, and then he goes to Hebron. But every place Abraham goes, he builds an altar. Because that's who he is. Who is he? He is a guy who worships God. And so he built an altar. That's what he does there. Now, he builds another. His fourth altar is he's going to sacrifice his son. And now then we're going to talk about sacrifices in a minute. We talked about that. All the sermon was about that last week. But it's a symbolic act of giving their whole self to God. I'll get to that in just a minute about sacrifices. But I want to move on to a couple other altars. Isaac builds an altar. Isaac did some other things his dad did, some good, some not so good. But one of the things he did that was good is he built an altar. And he built an altar at the place he settled down. And the place he settled down was in a place called Beersheba. Now, Beersheba comes into a lot of other Bible stories later. But Isaac is the guy who's he moves to this place with his wife. He has some issues with some people around them, and he says, this is where it's going to be my home, and I'm going to build an altar. Because one of the things we do at my house is we worship God. Okay, does this make sense? Why this altar thing is kind of important, but even more later. The next two altars and the last two, both Jacob built both of them. Well, one of them is where he is settling in new places, and he's gone, you know, back, actually. He travels quite a bit. He has about 30 or 40 years of traveling around before he settles down finally back to where his grandfather and his father lives, Shechem. So he moves to Shechem, and what does he do? He builds an altar. This is where he is right after he reconciles with Esau, his brother. They have a battle. They have a fight. And it takes years for them to reconcile. Any of you guys ever had a fight with a sibling and it took you a while to reconcile? Hope not as long as Jacob and Esau, but when he got finished with reconciling, he settled down. He said, I'm going to live here, and when I live here, I'm going to build an altar because that's who I am and that's what I do. But then God says, you know what? I want you to move back to Bethel. Because that's the place where you and I met, and you had this dream about going up and down a ladder. And that was years ago, but I want you to go back to that place. I want you to end up living your life there. So Jacob moves, and when he gets to his new place, what does he do? Yeah, everybody, built an altar. And these are the altars of Genesis, but I want to get a little bit deeper into why and what they're about, okay? So I want you to think this: sacrifices, memorials, and symbols, these three things. Now, the sacrifices, again, fit, and they are also symbols, and a lot of times it's everything you can imagine they would bring as a sacrifice. You think right off the bat, animals, but they brought other things also. They brought grain, and they brought other things that they would grow from the ground. But they would also bring other kinds of things, silver and gold they would bring as offerings. They didn't burn that, but they brought it as offerings. And the place you brought your sacrifice was the altar. You brought it to the altar. And so the altar, again, is the symbol of where I'm going to sacrifice. And the sacrifice was very, very important. And it's kind of like Art did this to us earlier. He asked the question, how many of you ever forget something? And, of course, we all remembered that we forget. That's one thing we do remember. We remember that we forget. And so everybody in the house raised their hand. This is kind of like this. Sometimes, okay, you're going to want to tell God that I love you. Does anybody like that in the house? I want to tell God I love you. Well, what God wants you to do, what he's doing is it's this symbolic act. A sacrifice is the symbolic act, okay? And what it's a symbol of is that I'm giving my allegiance, my love to you. And it's not anything else. Now, we do symbolic acts all the time that aren't religious. Let me tell you an example. Some of you have been to a sports event where they play the national anthem. And some of you do this, right? Why? That's a symbolic act. Okay, some of you pray. And when you pray, some of you do this. Okay, some of you do this. I know, I don't know if anybody does that because I do this, so I don't know what y'all are doing. I'm just assuming you're with me, you know, you're bowing your head. Why do you bow your head? Well, it's a symbolic act. The symbol itself has some meaning, you know. It's an act of submission, reverence, but it's a symbolic act. Does that make sense to you? That's what a sacrifice is. You're bringing the sacrifice, and what you're saying to God is, you, my allegiance is to you. Okay, it's going to say some more things too in just a minute. Because here's a couple of the, one of the things it does it, well, let me read to you from a little bit of commentary from the Application Study Bible. This is about Abraham and his altars. It says, Abraham built an altar to the Lord, and altars in those days were used in many religions, but for God's people, altars were more than places of sacrifice. It's not just a place of sacrifice. For them, altars symbolized communion with God. Okay, wait a minute. Have we done a symbolic thing today? Have we done something like that? Okay. And altars also commemorated notable encounters with God. Okay, you have an encounter with God, boom, you build an altar. They were built of rough stones and earth, and they often remained in place for years as continual reminders, because sometimes we need a reminder. So the altars served as reminders of God's protection and promises. So you walk by the altar and you think, God's protecting me today. You walk by the altar and said, God promised this to me today. And that's what the altar was about. You see, now, this is planting a seed in the hearts of God's people that later we're going to end up taking communion. And it's going to make some sense because we have symbols and symbolic acts. And it started out with altars. In the beginning, it was altars. So it says Abraham regularly built altars to God for two reasons. Prayer and worship, and reminders of God's promise to bless him. Abraham could not survive spiritually without regularly renewing his love and loyalty to God. And building altars helped him remember that God was at the center of his life. Okay, altars. That's the reason there's altars. Now, they're going to become much more more meaning than that. So here's one of the things, a couple of reasons they have altars. One is for substitution, and one is for consecration. The substitution altar is this. There's two things that get substituted when people make sacrifices at altars. In the day of, and this is all the cultures around, and this is for thousands of years, we don't do this now, but your firstborn son, they would offer to God. Now, in some cultures, they would actually take the child, the baby, and burn them. Kill them and burn them. God didn't do it that way. Instead, he said, symbolically, I want you to take a sheep or a goat and give it to the priest, and the priest will offer it, but it's symbolically saying, your son belongs to me. This is what he said, your son belongs to me. Eventually, all your children are going to belong to me, and you belong to me, and everything belongs to me, but specifically, your oldest son belongs to me, because in that culture, the oldest son was the one who inherited everything. And in my family, it was, you know, the brains and the looks went to the oldest son. Well, maybe not. But in this culture, okay, the oldest son. And so sometimes you would substitute, there would be a substitute offering. Well, another reason why you got the substitute was for guilt. If you were guilty of a sin and you needed to be punished, instead of you receiving the punishment, you would offer a sacrifice. Okay, now then, in the New Testament it says, now Jesus has become the sacrifice for us. So what's going to happen as a couple thousand years go by from here to Jesus is the altar as a symbol becomes replaced by something else. Okay? Before I get to that, though, I want to say something about consecration. God really wanted more than for just Abraham and the guys to build an altar. He didn't really want their animals. What he wanted is their heart. And so this is all symbolic of, I'm giving my whole self to you. When I see this altar, I'm reminded of when I offered an animal, which was symbolic of, I'm giving you my whole heart. That's why he wanted you to give your best stuff, not your leftover stuff, your best stuff on the altar. But what you're doing is, I'm giving you, God, I'm giving you myself. I'm giving you me. Okay? And so this is where we are in altars. He never really wanted our animals. He wanted our hearts because he's our king and he's our master. And he's our love. But it's not just this. This is where the seeds planted as altars, I'm going to say, become the cross. And we did that in the Jesus Storybook Bible last week, and I'm going to read a little bit of that to you today. But Jesus died for me on a cross. Just like those animals in Exodus, it didn't happen really in Genesis. They weren't offering animals for forgiveness. But in Exodus, it was. But I want to read this to you and remember, this is after Abraham had taken Isaac up on the mountain to sacrifice him. But instead, God provided a ram. And so Abraham and Isaac offered the ram, and God provided, that was the lesson. But here's another part of it that the Jesus Storybook Bible tells us. This is after the sacrifice of the ram, Isaac and Abraham. As they sat there on the mountaintop watching the embers of the fire die in the cool night air, the stars above them sparkling in a velvet sky. God helped Abraham and Isaac understand something important. God wanted his people to live, not die. God wanted to rescue his people, not punish them. But they must trust him. God promised, one day someone will be born into your family, and he will bring happiness to the whole world. God was getting ready to give the whole world a wonderful present. It would be God's way to tell his people, I love you. Many years later, another son would climb another hill carrying wood on his back. And like Isaac, he would trust his father and do what his father asked. He wouldn't struggle or run away. Who was he? God's son, his only son, the son he loved, the Lamb of God. What started out as an altar in a way of sacrifice became, for Jesus, the cross. And so, you know, I thought about this song as I'm reading this over and over. I thought about this song that we sang, it seems like years ago. I haven't sung it in church in a long time, but I'm going to sing it right now. You know, we had the beautiful duet, and now we're going to have Bob's solo. Yeah. Y'all probably know this song, so if you do know it and you want to join me at the appropriate time, I'll do this when it's time to join me. But this is the idea of the cross being like the altar. The seed is planted in Genesis, grows through Exodus, through thousands of years of offering sacrifices on an altar. And now here it's Jesus. He paid a debt he did not owe. I owed a debt I could not pay. I needed someone to wash my sins away. And now I sing a brand new song, Amazing Grace. Christ Jesus paid the debt that I could never pay. Jesus died on an altar. Well, his altar was a cross. And that altar cross has this symbolic meaning to us. And you'll see this symbol everywhere. And sometimes people forget, you know, what the real meaning to this cross that they may have hanging on their wall or hanging around their neck. But the cross is a symbol of Jesus being sacrificed for us because God loved us. He paid a debt he didn't owe. I owed the debt he couldn't pay, that I couldn't pay. And so here is God sacrificing his son on a cross. And we've been trained through the idea of sacrifice and idol and altars to think, okay, this is what this is now. It's not an altar, it's a cross. And so this happened for us, and it's very clear in Hebrews chapter 10 that this happened once and for all for my sins. I don't have to offer a sacrifice over and over and over. Jesus' sacrifice was enough for all of our sins for all time. He's died for that. But I still come to this idea of communion. I still think about the cross, and it's now become more of a memorial to me, and it's become a place where I continue to consecrate myself. I continue to say, I belong to you. And so this is why Paul writes this, right? He says in chapter 12 of Romans, he says, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. What? Yeah, he doesn't need me to offer a sheep. He doesn't need for me to offer some vegetables. He needs me to offer myself as a living sacrifice. All right? that's holy and pleasing. And it says, this is true worship. When I offer myself as a living sacrifice, that is what worship is. Now, we often just will relate the word worship just to singing, but we here know it's more than that. It is singing, but worship is any time you offer yourself to God. That's when you offer yourself to God. Now, how do you do this offering of myself to God? When we worship, what we're doing is we're really sacrificing our will, our way of life to God. Here's another way I want you to connect these two verses. As a living sacrifice is response to this. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves. That is, become a living sacrifice. I'm sacrificing myself. I'm going to deny myself. I'm going to put my will on the altar. I'm going to put everything I love on the altar. There's nothing that's going to come between me and my God. If it is, I'm going to put it on the altar. Everything on the altar. My ego on the altar. My dreams on the altar. My job, my family, everything is that could ever be between me and God, I'm put it on the altar. I'm going to deny myself, take up my cross. What is this, take up my cross? It's symbolic that I'm going to also go to the cross. In Galatians, Paul would write, I've been crucified with Christ. I've let myself be crucified with Christ. I put myself on the cross. I put myself on the altar. I'm sacrificing me. I'm giving myself to God. And as I give myself to God, okay, then what does God do to me? Well, we sacrifice ourselves and follow Jesus. What he does is he raises me up. I give him me, and he gives me back a better me. We're going to sing a song, and I have the lyrics of this song. It's called, what is it called, girls? I want to read some lyrics. It's I Offer My Life, and I'm going to read this because I just want to emphasize a few things. All that I am, all that I have, I lay them down before you, O Lord. All my regrets, all my acclaim, the joy and the pain, I'm making them yours. Lord, I offer my life to you. Everything that I've been through, use it for your glory. Lord, I offer my days to you, lifting my praise to you, a pleasing sacrifice. This is who we are. This is what we do. Abraham built altars. We offer living sacrifices, okay? Altar to Abraham, living sacrifice for us. Let's sing this song.